Welcome to another season on Ivy Hoops Online. I have a very, very special guest here to start the season. The current Ivy League Coach of the Year, Mitch Henderson. Last year, he led the Tigers to an unprecedented and historic season, and he coached three all-Ivy first-team players for the first time at Princeton in 50 years. And of course, he won the title by winning the first ever Ivy League tournament. Mitch, thank you for being here.
Thanks, George. Appreciate being here.
Before turning the page on last year, and Tiger fans are going to be reluctant to ever turn the page on that season, I do want to talk a little bit about what happened last year. You told me at the beginning of the year, before you started, that you had a veteran team and you thought you could challenge them with your out-of-conference schedule. Well, you certainly did. You spent the first month on the road. You actually covered, as I calculated, about 15,000 miles. You lost two starters to injury. By mid-December, you're at 4-6. How were you able to keep the players focused at that point?
Well, you brought up, the moment you're talking about is the moment that I talk about and have referenced to the team, to others, all the time. And I think that we go, at least I, you know, you go through different iterations each season. Even we had, we were returning everyone. We lost one senior who did not play. We were returning everybody. Hans Bray is, of course, coming off an ACL tear, so he didn't play the year before, but he was back and he's a captain. And then between to start the St. Joe's game, we lose Caruso. We've gone Hans Bray's, and the lineup before that moment was it wasn't unclear, but it was, how am I going to get Miles Stevens more minutes? What do I do about Devin Kennedy? How about Amir Bell? What do I do with Hans Bray's? How do I factor in Pete Miller? I had some questions, and then those questions became answered in that moment, almost for me. And then I thought the turning point for us, although we lost, was Monmouth, at Monmouth, and then the Bucknell game, which you were at.
Yes,
and
I was.
And I thought, I looked at you, and I remember this. Richmond Air Guzzo comes into the game, gets fouled on their best player, who ends up being Patriot League Player of the Year, this kid Nana, who's a very difficult player to guard, and makes both free throws. And then I knew that the group was connected, and I had been challenging them, and we were pushing them and saying, don't be satisfied with your record. Don't worry about the record. Only worry about how we're going about playing with four and with each other. And I thought that game was, we were poised, we were confident. They played with kind of a recklessness that was really good. And I'm talking along about this, but that was the moment. Of course, we didn't lose from that moment on until the NCAAs, but that was it. That was a moment. I don't know if you can point to a moment every year, but that was the moment for us.
Well, some analysts rate Bucknell actually higher than any Ivy League team coming into this season. So when you win at Bucknell, you've accomplished something. Not too many people do it. You get past that, you start the Ivy League season 3-0 at home, fortunately, and you defeated Penn and Yale in that stretch. Then reading period. 2 weeks off. We're the only team that has to do it. But it's a tough thing every year, especially last year, because you came out of reading period and you have to go to Hanover and Cambridge. Tell us a little bit about that weekend, please.
Yes, so it ends up, as you know, it's 2 weeks off, but it ends up being 3 weeks with the week leading up to the Harvard-Dartmouth series. Back in school, but it ends up being this extra week where, you know, we're, it's a long time. We go up to Dartmouth as prepared as we were not playing college basketball games, you know, and it's different when you put on the uniform, and Spencer Weiss really carried us through, I thought, in that game. We you know, very difficult game to play with, you know, knowing Harvard's coming, fortunate to win, and then I thought the Harvard, you know, we have not been successful at Harvard for a few years. It's a very difficult place to play, but I thought that game, we start off playing very well, but I thought we found that game, we found out how to win really hard games. So it's it, it And that was a turning point, another turning point in the season. You know, it was just a terrific game. The year before, we had a very difficult and crushing loss there that probably cost us the title, and actually did cost us the title. And so it was nice. It was vindication, I think, for the group. And, you know, to kind of have it go the way it went. Miles Stevens passes up a three, drives to the rim, gets fouled, makes one of two, I think, or he's make one of, he misses it.
He missed the free throw, right. And Stephen Cook,
and Steve Cook
was right there.
Rebound. And in that play, Will Gladson, I sub Will in, you know, and to get a bigger presence on the line, and that free throw goes right where Will would have been, but Will had done such a good job of sort of hammering his way in there, which allowed Steve to get in from behind. And, you know, it, you're right. I think we were talking beforehand. If that game goes to overtime, you know, you didn't want that game to go overtime. But I'm talking a lot, but you're getting me excited about a moment that doesn't come along very often. Very appreciative of those moments.
I got to ask you this about the play in the last 5 seconds. Stevens gets the ball on the wing. He's got a chance for a tying three. And he drove to the basket. How did that happen? Was that his play?
Well, yeah, it wasn't. It was. The play was for him. But what I like is he was decisive. He made a decision and he went with it. And in those moments, we want to live with what we've decided to do. And I really think that that's, you know, been a part of our success in late games the last couple of years.
Well, after that weekend, having beaten three of the other three teams that made the Ivy League tournament, it was clear to most observers that the Tigers were going to qualify for the tournament. In fact, you did. You were unbeaten in the league and then got into the first ever Ivy League tournament to be played at the Palestra. And, of course, naturally, your first opponent was the University of Pennsylvania. Tell us how you felt going into the tournament.
I think I drew a circle on the board for the guys on the team, and I said, here are all the things that we're dealing with right now, and it was the games at the Palestra, first ever Ivy League tournament. You're playing against Penn, you know, and I drew it all outside the circle. And I said, inside the circle, this is really all that matters. And then as soon as they throw the ball up, I was wrong. We were focused on all the things that didn't matter. And in fairness, we were probably playing a style that wasn't conducive to us, and we're affected by the moment. And Penn was playing, I thought, great. They were playing very well.
They finished the year 6-2 after a horrible start and got into the tournament, beating Harvard the weekend before. It looked like things, the stars might have been aligned for Steve Donahue at that point.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have this really wonderful season where you win the league and you go, you know, you have a great group that you believe in and you've gone through a lot with, and it's about to disappear right in front of your eyes. And, you know, and then we were very fortunate. You know, a couple things could have easily gone against us. I don't think you win that game very often, but the group stayed together and made a couple really big plays to get to Yale, and of course, you know, lucky to finish and fortunate to finish it out that weekend.
You just can't overstate the difficulty it is to beat an Ivy League team twice in a season, and as it turned out, you had to beat two Ivy League teams three times in the same season in order to win the championship, which you did, and Tiger fans will be forever grateful. How do you rate the job that the league did in setting up the Ivy League tournament? Nobody knew what to expect going in. Now you've had a year. How do you think it turned out?
I thought it was first class. There was going to be some growing pains along the way. I was and am still in favor of a tournament. I thought that the Sunday game, there were, you know, our players got to experience what a real tournament feels like. It was a Sunday noon, I think it was a noon game. There was a lot of media presence. There was a buzz in the gym. I thought it was, you know, Robin Harris and her staff, I thought it was terrific. And I really feel like it comes down to the fact that this is what the student athletes wanted. And I thought leading up, you know, going back to February and March, there were very meaningful games being played throughout the course, and we were all paying attention to, you know, where the slots might be and who might be playing who, and I, you know, that contributed, I think, to a more exciting overall season too.
It certainly did. I don't think anyone anticipated that in the last 2 weeks of the season, even though the top three teams were established, you had another four teams playing meaningful games, any one of which could have gotten into the tournament had things fallen a different way. So in that sense, it certainly added a lot of drama at the end of the season, which in many seasons has not been there. All right, let's talk about 2017-2018. It looks to me that the out-of-conference schedule is at least as challenging as last year's. Coach, you've scheduled Butler, BYU, and St. Joe's, and that's just the first week. Well, what's your objective here in making such a difficult road ahead of yourself?
Well, it starts with the, you know, my experience and what we did a year ago, and also my experience as a student athlete here at Princeton. I always felt like we should be challenging ourselves non-conference. This is a group to do it with. We have with the returners and the guys that are going to factor into playing for us this season. I think that what you learn with playing a difficult road schedule is okay. So you play about, let's say you play 14 games. Each game is its own thing, and you prepare them to win the game. And I can only say that once, and I put as much emphasis on it behind it as I can, because when you prepare to beat really very, very good teams, especially on the road, you have to be fully, you know, clear-headed on what your objectives are together as a group. And it makes you, it forces you and pushes you into corners that you may be uncomfortable with. And you know, that's what Butler does. That's what BYU does. That's what going to USC does, playing Miami. Of course, it also helps your national profile. We are a national recruiting university and school, and we want to attract the best student-athletes. But at the end, it's about getting ready to win the league. And I think that schedule does it.
I think you're going to go 15,000 miles this November and December, as well as last year. And of course, you're trip to Hawaii over Christmas should be a lot of fun, as well as important in preparing your ball club. You find yourself in the same position this year that Yale was in last year. Jones lost, he won the title 2 years ago and then lost two Ivy League first teamers, including the player of the year, Justin Sears. I bring that up because I will remind you that Yale came within a game. They played for the title last year, even after losing what you have lost. And no coach is going to feel sorry for you when you return Amir Bell, Devin Kennedy, and Miles Stevens, who was himself a first-teamer and the Defensive Player of the Year. Tell us about those key players for this year.
Yeah, you mentioned Yale, and I didn't, you know, Justin Sears was such a good player. And he was, when he left, He was a terrific, terrific, dominant player in the league, and I didn't feel sorry for Yale when he was gone.
Yeah, New Jersey kid, incident.
Yes, yeah, and and you know, I don't, you know, Spencer and Steve and Pete and the senior class we just graduated, no one feels sorry for us. But that's the best part about this, is the next group kind of comes in and has to assume and absorb like more important coaching roles, right? So. The best part about this is that you get everybody involved on what the objective of the current season is. So you mentioned Miles and Devin and Amir. Those are the ones we know about. But they, in the years past, have had roles where they're expected to dominate games, but they're also, you know, they weren't asked to carry the load for everybody else, which is what Spencer and Steve did and Pete did for the last couple of years. So now those guys are expected to pick the load up for everybody else. So that's what we're working through right now, is how does the group come together?
Well, last year, of course, you had, at the beginning of the year, 8 or 9 players coming back who had meaningful minutes. You're losing two important players. And my own assessment is that you're going to have to get some help from some of your first teamers this year. It's just unavoidable. I know you've got a very good class coming in. Just tell us a little bit about those five kids that you're bringing in this year.
Well, you know, you're right. You know, I think the five freshmen are going to contribute, but I'm looking, I said this to the guys even yesterday, who can we trust? Who are the guys that are contributing every single day to the things that matter and what makes you win? The freshman group's very talented. And, you know, I'll mention them individually here in a second, but they're learning about what it means to be trustworthy for them, their teammates. And that's a process for us. But it's a talented group, and I'm not putting anything past them. But, you know, we have Charlie Began from Don Bosco Prep. We have Sebastian Much from Southern California. He's a very talented, big, in the mold of some of the centers that we've had that are a little undersized. And I say centers for us, but really it's a post position, sort of interchangeable. And he can shoot, he can pass, he dribbles, he's competitive. He's learning where he can be aggressive and picking his spots. I think he can be a very good, you know, post for us. Jerome DeRozier's is in the mold of an Ian Hummer, right? He's got a big body. Not fair to compare anybody to Ian, but he's, you know, at this stage, but he's got his physical strength and power. He's also very vulnerable on the court, which, in a positive way, like off the court. His mental approach is like, teach me, show me, help me, which is really unusual for a freshman. I think that's a really good quality. Ryan Schwieger from Charlotte, he is a big guard, a long, big guard that's going to pose a lot of problems for other teams in terms of matching up. He can shoot. He can put the ball on the floor. We can post him up. Highly competitive kid. And then, of course, Elijah Barnes, who's a local kid from Freehold, and very talented, powerful two-foot jumper, can guard multiple different positions. All of the freshmen see themselves as coming into a program, number one, where there's a standard, and number two, where they want to make their impact felt. Like they've been around here when these guys have gotten their rings. They've been around and seeing, you know, what it means to win a championship from what other people see it. But now, how do they get there? What's the path for them? And that's the fun part.
Well, we can't wait for the season to get started. I'm not going to ask you for any projections about our league, but with the advent of an Ivy League tournament, do you think, and given that the talent level in this league, particularly at the top, is rising every year, does that bring the possibility of a second bid into the discussion?
Yes, it should be in the discussion. It is. We talk about it as and within the league and within the coaches. You know, when we went to the NIT 2 years ago, we I think had a 38 RPI, which if you look at the national scale of where we are, that you would hope that could sort of factor itself more strongly into an at-large discussion. But we were a sixth seed in the NIT. Harvard in 2011, who after winning the league and having a very high RPI, was a sixth seed. So let's, as long as we keep knocking on the door with the conversation, eventually the knocking gets a little bit more loud and then you bust through, I would hope. That said, I still think it's about winning the league and then now playing your very best basketball in the middle of March for the tournament. And that's not, you know, everything goes towards those two goals, I think, for the league. And you mentioned the league. It's a very, very strong league, very talented. You know, I'm playing a challenging non-conference schedule, but the league schedule is brutal. It's brutal. It's very difficult. There are no easy games. Everybody knows it. And the talent level is very high.
Well, Mitch, we thank you once again for sitting down and sharing some of your thoughts with us. We thank you for your accomplishments last year. We wish you the best of luck in the season about to get underway. Thanks very much.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it.
A quick reminder, the Tigers start their 2017-18 campaign on Sunday, November 12th at Butler in a very, very tough season opener. It'll be at 6 p.m. in the Butler Fieldhouse, and you can see it on the CBS Sports Network. So long, everybody. Thanks.